All right, Kristen. So here we are, 4th of July weekend.
Woohoo! Yeah.
It's the peak. I think we're pretty much reaching the peak of summer movie season.
Love this time of year.
Two huge blockbusters, right? We've got Transformers, Dark of the Moon, Transformers 3, long awaited, and the world's first Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts romance, Larry Crown.
The world has been waiting.
The world has been waiting. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the question is, I think we know which one's going to win at the box office most likely, but, you know, which one did you like best?
Which one won in my heart?
Yes, which one won in your heart, Kristen, in Kristen's heart?
You know, I want to answer your question, but first let me introduce myself. This is Kristen Meinzer, producer for The Takeaway.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, movie critic for Newsday, and this is Movie Date.
You posed a very important question just now.
It's a stumper, isn't it?
4th of July movie weekend. What movie won the battle over my heart?
Yes.
The battle of independence of my heart.
Should we start with Transformers, since that's really the biggie?
Let's do that. Let's do it.
And so, your thoughts, as if I didn't know.
Now, I just want to make it very clear. I did not see the first Transformers. I did not see the second Transformers.
Oh, so you're coming in new.
So maybe that affected my judgment slightly.
Okay.
But, you know, from what I understand, there has been a battle happening between the Decepticons and the Autobots.
You picked up on that. Okay.
And this battle has been happening over the first three movies.
That's right.
These are kind of robot alien life forms from another planet.
Intelligent mechanical beings.
Yes.
As they describe themselves at the beginning. Yes.
Yes. And all right, so that's what it's about. I think, that's perfectly fine. Whatever. I like alien movies. I like E.T.
Yeah.
And but it really is completely awful. It is awful in so many ways, not the least of which is that you don't need to have a robot movie that lasts for 2.5 hours of this sort.
2 hours, 34 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then the last half hour, it might have been more than a half hour, was the final battle scene.
Yeah, in Chicago, of all places. Right.
And I don't even know how they ended up in Chicago. The rest of the movie was in D.C. There were little splashes of sub-Sahara Africa,
right.
And suddenly they're in Chicago,
right?
Fighting, knocking over the Willis Tower. They're doing all sorts of stuff,
right?
And it just went on and on and on and on and on. And I actually just felt like if there's ever a robot takeover, the way they're going to kill us is not through mind control or lasers. They're actually going to force us to watch this movie repeat over and over and over again until we all die.
Until you succumb. Yes, yes. All right. Now, I have seen the first two, and I actually liked the first Transformers movies quite a bit. The first Transformers. I was really surprised because I thought it had a lot of action. I thought the effects were really great. I thought Shia LaBeouf, who I really liked, was charming in the role. He was the perfect kind of all-American average teenager. The movie was funny. It had a sense of humor about itself. It seemed to work well between being kind of loud and hard-hitting enough for adults, but also bloodless and soft enough to appeal to kids.
Mm-hmm.
The second one I thought was a little less successful, a little messier, a little more all over the map. And this one I gave a half star out of four. I'm pretty sure it's the lowest rating
I've given any
movie.
No, Rafer, I have to ask you, though. How did it earn that half star?
That's
all I can think. How?
But, I mean, you saw it.
How did it? Did it deserve any star? I'm just saying it doesn't.
You're wondering what it did to get the half.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I thought that the action scenes as they were unfolding in front of you were mostly looked pretty good. I mean, they were
elaborate. Not enough transforming.
Not enough transforming, really? Oh,
no.
Well,
there was actually very little transforming. And I thought, really going to take advantage of the fact that these guys are Transformers, why aren't they transforming?
Okay. They're mostly robots and occasionally cars. There was more transforming in the first. That's true. I mean, the battle scenes were very elaborate, and there were some, you know, kind of white-knuckle moments that you could kind of enjoy somewhat. I felt that that was, you know, look, you know, there's motion on the screen that keeps my eye entertained. I feel like you at least get a half star for, like, you know, putting that together.
You're like the little fish in the tank, and if you have a flashlight nearby.
Totally. That's totally me. But I mean, you know, as I was, we were just on the show on the takeaway, and I was saying that the movie has turned really ugly, and I thought it had turned really mean spirited. Shia LaBeouf's character is just totally unlikable. He's just a loudmouth, entitled, and you know, he's
living off his model girlfriend.
Yeah, he's living off of Rosie Huntington Whiteley, the Victoria's Secret model who's replacing Megan Fox, and she's, you know. Megan Fox, I miss Megan Fox in the Transformers movies. I really do. She was in some strange way.
This is one of those quotes I'm going to pull and play back to you over and over again down the road.
Here's the thing about Megan Fox. When Megan Fox was in the original Transformers movies, you didn't have to have all the other characters in the movie saying, whoa, what a looker. Boy, she's something else. And who do we have here? And giving her the elevator eyes. Megan Fox is like hotter than the sun, right? I mean, you look at Megan Fox, you can actually feel your corneas burning out. You didn't need to point out that Megan Fox was Megan Fox. In this movie, they're very insecure about having replaced Megan Fox, and so people are constantly like objectifying her throughout the entire film, and after a while it gets a little offensive and tiresome, and you're kind of like, is that all this chick is there for? I mean, the answer is yes, but you
absolutely
know.
We know that I just don't like that the facade was broken and that they're acknowledging why she's there. Maybe
it's complicated. I wrestled with that, Kristen. I have to admit to you. But yeah, but the film
is. You don't
want to
be reminded of the fact that you're there to objectify her.
I know. I don't know. Somehow, I felt better about objectifying Megan Fox, and I didn't feel as good objectifying Rosie Huntington Whiteley. But anyway, but the film, I thought, was really it was loud, and it was unpleasant, and it was mean spirited, and it also made me worry about Shia LaBeouf's career, because I really feel like he has not made a good movie in a long time, and this movie, he seems really unlikable and kind of despicable in this movie.
He is pretty awful. Yeah. I'm okay if he disappears.
You're okay. Yeah,
I'm
you're okay.
I hated Wall Street. I hated almost every movie.
Wall Street was
Eagle Eye. Oh,
my love for him basically stems back and is now pretty much limited to Disturbia. That sort of a teen update on Rear Window that I thought was really clever and fun, and I thought he was really charming in it. And since then, it's been kind of diminishing returns. But there you go on Transformers.
Well, what about Larry Crown?
This is right in your wheelhouse, Kristen. A total chick flick.
I love romantic comedies. I love Tom Hanks. I love Julia Roberts. And I really love romantic comedies that are targeting people over 40, because I'm kind of a corny sap, equal opportunity, everyone should be able to fall in love in the movie sort of person.
Sure.
And I feel that most of the movies focus on people under 30 falling in love.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of nice to see people of different age groups doing that.
Give us the brief rundown of the plot.
We have Larry Crown, played by Tom Hanks, working at some sort of box store.
Right.
He's been employee of the month. He's been employee of the month, I think, 9 times.
Right.
But then he gets laid off, and they say they're downsizing him because he doesn't have a college education. So he is laid off. He's recently divorced. He goes back to community college. He realizes he has a gas-guzzling car and starts driving a scooter instead.
Yep.
Joins a scooter gang at school.
A young group of, like, scooter hipster oddballs.
Who all just love him and adopt him and give him a makeover and redo his furniture for him. And then, of course, Julia Roberts is his tough-as-nails teacher for speech class. But she's
also sort of going through a divorce, right?
Yeah, and I don't want to tell you what happens.
Don't tell us.
I don't want
by
to
all,
tell you.
Kristen,
I'm
don't spoil it.
I know. I better not spoil it. All right, what did you think of it?
I thought it was really, really bloodless and just and boring and timid. I thought the film just couldn't. I mean, there's just no chemistry between Hanks and Roberts, and there's the plot is kind of everything. Really, what happens? I think one of the problems with the movie is that after Larry Crown is downsized and axed from his company, everything just goes great. right? He finds this
perfect.
This young chick on a scooter takes an interest in him, cleans him up, you know, puts him in some vintage Los Angeles duds with a little wallet on a chain and some boots. And
an old buddy says, "Hey, why don't you just work at my place?
Yeah, why don't you work at my diner?" And now he's got a job, and granted, he has to give up his house, but he moves into this sort of nice looking hipster apartment that looks like it's in Venice or something, and meets a hot teacher who looks like Julia Roberts, and then
don't ruin it.
You know,
don't ruin it.
He takes an econ class and discovers that he's great at it, and then
George Takei is his teacher.
That's right. And now George Takei is probably the best thing about the film.
Every time he was on screen, the audience cheered.
Yes, right, right.
The audience went nuts.
People loved him.
He was on screen.
I know, he was funny. That's why he was the only like really truly funny thing about it. And then, so it's just a story of like, you know. Guy has a minor setback, and then life goes swimmingly.
You said something hilarious on the takeaway a few minutes ago when we were on. You said that there were a nice person and a nice person falling into like.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Like, gee, that's exciting to see. Like, two people realizing that they kind of enjoy each other's company. And I just...
Sort of,
right? And it's not clear what they're seeing in each other at all.
Especially
right?
Because Tom Hanks is kind of playing Forrest Gump again in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't really think he seemed that dumb, but I know what you're saying.
There are points where he is playing slow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right, so the moment of truth. The moment of truth. What was the best movie of the week? This 4th of July weekend, what should people be seeing then?
Well, I think as you and I both agreed, it's Monte Carlo.
Yes, Monte Carlo.
The tweener chick flick.
Starring Selena Gomez.
Right, from the Disney Channel.
Yes.
And Leighton Meester and Katie Cassidy from Gossip Girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
It, you know what? It's a romp.
Yep.
A romp through Europe with your best girlfriends.
Right. Cute guys. MAC Cosmetics.
Oh, gosh.
Oscar de la Renta gowns.
Makeovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get the whole thing. You get the adventure. You get the wackiness ensuing all the time. Mistaken
right.
identity. You get all sorts of fun, frothy fantasies.
Yeah.
And I felt in a way it was almost paying tribute to those kind of like Cary Grant 1960s romps.
It was very Roman Holiday.
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
There was something really fun and carefree and silly about it. I really thought Leighton Meester and that Katie Cassidy did a great job in it.
They were both really good, I thought. They actually, you know, I was saying in my review, as I was typing this line, I kept thinking to myself, do I really want to put my name on this line? And I just thought, that's it. I'm going to write this. I'm going to write that Leighton Meester gave the character a measure of depth. Because I really think she did.
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo. I just thought, there it is. All right, my byline's on. It's too late. I can't take it back. It's out there.
She did, though.
She did.
And the movie, you know, you can't go in there expecting this to be Casablanca.
Right.
You just have to keep in mind, this may as well just be a made-for-television movie for ABC Family.
Yeah.
It's not really much bigger than that.
I'll tell you something interesting, which you may or may not know. I don't know if you did any research on this, but when you and I were in the theater watching the film.
With the Girl Scouts.
With the Girls. That's right, with all the Girl Scouts.
Rafer, Kristen, and 5 million Girl Scouts.
Right, right. And I think they enjoyed it. That bodes well for the film. But you and I were both noticed a fleeting credit in the intro credits that said based on the novel Headhunters by
yes,
Jules Bass.
Yes.
And I kept thinking, oh, it's based on a novel. And also, doesn't the name Jules Bass ring a bell? So it turns out it's Jules Bass of Rankin Bass.
What?
The guys who did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Frosty the Snowman and all the Christmas specials.
I love them.
It turns out that he had written this kind of, you know, beach read, chick lit novel. He's the guy is over 60, and this came out, I think, in the early part of the last decade, the 2000, somewhere in there. Originally, the film was going to star Nicole Kidman, and she was going to play the main role, and it was going to be an adult film, and the women were going to be kind of... you know, what's the word? Not cougars, but sort of predators. They were going. It sounds to me like they were going to go to Europe and sort of willfully mislead rich guys into thinking that they were socialites.
Oh,
a whole different movie. And apparently, at some point, Fox decided, no, we want to make it younger, and they went so far as to make it, you know, 14-year-old basically, right? Just out of high school kids and aim for the sort of 14-year-old crowd. And so now you've got Selena Gomez as this sort of normal Texas teenager. She goes to Paris. She gets mistaken for a British socialite, and, you know, mayhem and romance ensues. But it was, but it started out as a very different movie. You can kind of tell here and there, I think, because it is a little weird that the girls, they don't just accidentally fall into this lifestyle. They do kind of willfully decide, oh, let's just do this for a little bit, right? Let's go ahead and impersonate this person knowingly for a little bit. It's not totally accidental the way these movies usually are. So there's a little bit of that left over in the film. But I still loved it, and I still, well, love is maybe a strong word. But I was still very happy to be sitting through it, and I thought it was refreshing and genuine, and it didn't seem artificial to me. And you know, I had a good time.
And in a rare instance, I have to say I fully agree with you, Rafer.
I'm so
100%
glad.
I agree with you. I can't believe it.
I know. Surprising. Surprising. And I was surprised that, that you know, wound up being the one that we both liked.
Yeah. Us and the girls.
That's great. So there you go. So that's the one you should see.
This week's movie date, Monte Carlo. Go see it.
Did you know that you can follow Movie Date on Twitter and Facebook? You can also give us feedback on the podcast and tell us what movies you want us to see next.
Log on to themoviedate.org to find out more. And thanks so much for listening.